Thank you. I'm very sorry what we're doing to you with the process. I hate to have anybody put it to effect. I hate to see how you're being pushed down, crushed by inexorable auditing. So I'm going to teach you today how to crush a little harder. I feel bad about it. And I don't want to find myself in a state of sympathy and so forth here. It's very, very bad. How are you making out, huh? Doing all right?
Yes.
Which is the best process, responsible or confront? Which?
Confront.
Well, that's a better process. You think you'll make it on either process?
Yes.
Okay. Today's lecture is clearing. Communication processes specific. Communication as a process is senior to any and all processes. Your main problem as an auditor stems from the fact that to be audited, a person has to be able to communicate slightly. When he cannot communicate at all, you run into distinct problems. When we realize that an individual can set up an automaticity, a machinery, a valence of somethingness, a something other than selfness, you might say, which can give the apparency of communication, you will realize that your problem getting the PC into communication is more difficult than it sometimes appears. You think the communication is somebody talking. It's not. Communication is somebody communicating. And the communication formula is cause, distance, effect, with the person at cause relaying thoughts, ideas, or somethingness across a space to another point, which is the effect point. Now, this goes hand in glove with an individual's ability to receive a communication. And a person can actually receive a communication to the degree that he can emanate a communication. When this becomes unbalanced, we get the effect scale, where the individual must communicate, but cannot be communicated to. And oddly enough, we are looking at once at the first vestiges of a machine. We're looking at a valence. We're looking at a gimmick. He has set something up to talk for him while he ducks. Now, that is the exact purpose of one of these machines, is to appear to be there while not having to receive anything. In other words, that's no effect on self, total effect on others. That's the bottom of the scale. Of course, it goes through various odds and ends, and somewhere on the scale, low down, you will find total effect on self cropping up. But then, that's a misnomer, isn't it? It isn't self at all. There's total effect on what is there. And self might not be there at all. There's some substitute self. Well, this is the basic purpose of a valence. To facilitate communication is the way it starts in, meaning mass or self. One dreams up an identity in order to communicate. You got the idea. He is himself. He is at the point of emanation. But he says his name is Joe. You got the idea. He has an identity. He puts a little mask there so he can be identified. He says, I have an identity. Beingness, in other words, is the entrance point. There's got to be some beingness or some feeling of beingness before people know where to return the communication to or where to communicate to. If you have a Russian society where everybody is numbered by the same number, I think that's a ne plus ultra of that particular type of socialism. Everybody is known by the same name and there's no difference any place and everything is identified everywhere. I think that's end goal. Why, you look around and you don't know whether you were just talking to Joe or Pete or Bill or what. In other words, communication becomes some sort of a spinning mechanism. You've been talking to a person, number 698, and you were talking about lifting a couple of girders up to the top of the big bridge, and you got it all agreed, and you came back later and you saw that the girders had been lifted to the top of the big truck, but not to the bridge, and you said, what are the girders doing on the truck, 698? And 698 says, guess what? Why, what girders? What truck? Well, like I told you about before. And the fellow says, I've never seen you before. But it's 698 you're talking to, only it's another 698, only nobody's ever found it out. And we have what? We have total irresponsibility for communication is the end goal of all socialisms. See, you never know then. So that is the bottom mockery of Thetans floating around with no slightest identity or difference. You see, nobody's ever individualized in any degree. And you say to Thetan without name, top scale, you see, you say, what you doing? Oh, he says, I'm just floating around. What's your name? And you say, well, I don't have a name. I'm just floating around, too. And you sort of see an emanation the next day, and you say, what, are you still here? And he says, who? He says, I just arrived. And you see, you're baffled. Now, the way to solve that problem is to adapt a beingness to the situation. And sometimes up in the upper part of the scale, this becomes very complex. We haven't examined that here on Earth, and possibly people haven't experienced it. Well, they certainly haven't experienced it for a very long time. There's a vestige of it in the Blackfoot Indians' morning rituals, which are fascinating. It isn't much of a religious ritual. He gets out of bed, he feels angry, so he reaches for a pot of vermilion and smears red on his face. And that means, I am angry. And he walks down the street and nobody talks to him. He doesn't want to be talked to, that's all. You see? And so he makes three yellow stripes across his face as he rolls out of bed. Well, that means something else. That means he's going to go hunting. And if anybody wants to help him going hunting, why, that's fine, because they're going hunting. Why, they can go hunting with him, because there he is. He's got his advertising sign up. Get the idea? They have a great many of these symbols all done with paint, and they do them first thing in the morning, and that's it. Their mood changes sometimes during the day. There's not much water on the plains. I am personally, however, much more interested in a custom which I ran into when I was 16 or 17, is the position of the hibiscus flower, as worn by girls in the South Pacific. Well, these are beingnesses, kind of sunk into doingnesses, a beingness doingness thing. This is what these people are doing, or this is what these people are emoting, and they represent that in various ways. We do that in the Western society with facial expressions and with moods and so forth, and people don't read them very well, and we get very impatient because they have no sensitivity to our moods, we say. Well, if we wore an advertising sign like red paint or hibiscus flower or something like that, they'd be sensitive to our moods. We don't go at that broadly. But early on the track, a Thetan used to mock up different identities for different activities. And you had to be very clever to keep up with it, to know who Joe was today. He had terrific differentiation, and the differentiation itself made problems of communication. In other words, from all Thetans, more or less the same, except they vibrate differently, and they're in different locations, and that sort of thing, don't have names. Then they'd go into solving that problem, you see, but they wouldn't solve it very much. And they'd go into different beingnesses. They'd adopt a beingness, but it was so fluid and flexible that the next few days you'd be talking to this fellow in this smart costume, and you'd say, you know, I met an awful jerk the other day. His name was Jojo. And he'd say, yeah. He'd say, you better not talk about me the other day, because that was me. And say, so. And so, well, I was another fellow. Let you out of that one real quick, see? And that's too great a differentiation. See, from too great a similarity, they pass very easily in too great a differentiation. Try to seek some sort of a mean. And actually, in this present lifetime, you were living actually not as far below a decent mean of identity as you would think offhand. The mechanism is still there and very workable. Only trouble with the body is it gets sick and you can't discard the thing, and you get in trouble and the FBI gets your fingerprints, and it has various liabilities, so on. Bodies do have liabilities. But they do furnish constant and continuous identification. And people wish that they'd furnish, however, also differences of personality from time to time to meet various situations. There are situations in which you have to be a very tough guy or a very mean gal, you see. And there are other situations where only sweetness and light will handle the thing. And you're out of mood at the moment, you see. And you're being all sweetness and light when you should be tough, you know. And being tough when you should be sweetness and light. And you wish you were a little more flexible. These bodies have fitted into, if they drop down the line, they are simply too constant, much too constant and too inflexible. In other words, we've gone over toward too much sameness within the one body. And we protest against that, and we would like to change it and flip it around and be a little bit more comprehensible. Our situation of being very same all the time does not permit us to change in the environment the way we would like to. There's times when a girl should look like a very industrious secretary or something like that, and times when she should look like a notch dancer, you see. And she finds very often to her embarrassment that in a situation where she should look like a notch dancer, somebody looks upon her as a very industrious secretary. There's difficulties. These are the difficulties and problems of beingness. And all of these problems exist solely because of communication. Now, this very rapidly deteriorates into reasons why one should avoid communication. And the second of Thetan enters into that one, which is the backflow. Which enters into the backflow, you get a situation where a person is pulling out of communication. And when he starts pulling too consistently and continually out of communication, he, of course, is defeating the end goal. And when he gets obsessively out of communication, he's more or less had it. He cannot then not only not adapt to given situations, but he can't even find out what's going on because he's too withdrawn from them. He could be right in the middle of a whirlpool and not know what he was in. It's strictly a where am I? Now, various conditions of beingness, doingness, and havingness add up. For instance, in the field of havingness, individuals will dream up conversation pieces, and they're liable to pick up almost anything as a conversation piece. Of course, during the war, they're never conversation pieces, they're lying pieces. And even on the old plains, I remember an old frontiersman one time said to me when I was a little kid, I was digging very industriously into a bank, you know, something like a small fox terrier, disappearing all but my heels from view, you know, and I was trying to follow up and get out a rusty rifle I had seen at the point of an old Indian massacre, you know. I was trying to get this thing out and wrestling around. And he came over and he said to me very languidly, with a big sp of tobacco, he says to me, he says, what you doing, sonny? He says, trying to collect some lion material. And he dug it out and handed it over. But conversation pieces, having this. And then people get big reasons why they have to have conversation pieces. Then they try to make more conversation, make it more serious, make it more continuous, get big purpose for these bits of havingness, you know. Finally, you get into a machine age where it all has purpose, you know. You get utilitarian design. You get things being done by machinery for thetans. You get science fiction. You get all sorts of things. Now, where does the individual strike any kind of a balance? Well, he only strikes a balance where he actually can fulfill a communication formula at his own desire, where he is not forced to communicate, where no mechanism within him is forcing him to withdraw from communication, where he does not have to assume certain positions in order to communicate, where he does not have to go through odd rituals of one kind or another to communicate. The rituals of communication are some of the greater oddities that we run into. There has to be a little ritual, but sometimes this can get so involved. I remember all sorts of rituals of communication I've observed. They didn't answer their purpose. Everything was totally dedicated to ritual. Communication never happened. Everything was being set up to have a talk. You know, all the persiflage and verbiage and so forth that would go on would all center around some oblique idea that somebody never did get across. You get Polynesian tribes, the gab gab walla walla that these fellows go through just to get something straight, brown races. Everything winds up as a ritual. The ritual itself has nothing but its own purpose of being a ritual. No communication ever happens, just a ritual happens. You eventually break it down into a machine age if you go far enough. Now, this ritual taking the place of communication first facilitated communication and eventually got down to a point where it became a communication valence. And if the person wanted to communicate, he set this valence going. He didn't talk. He set the valence going. And he didn't listen. The valence listened. And finally, you get the fellow saying, "Who am I? See, who am I? Where am I?" He's gotten into such a ritual that he himself can't even keep any track of it. Take an old fogey club that you suddenly walk into and everybody's asleep in their chairs and the plush is 4 feet deep and there's spider webs growing from the top of the butler's head down to his shoulder, you know, and nothing's moved in there for just ages and ages, not since Cecil Rhodes set sail for South Africa, you know. Nothing's moved. And you come in, you slap one of these fellows on the back, you see. Well, you say, "Hiya, bud," or something like that. And if you got any response, it would be to the effect that you had used the wrong ritual. See? No communication would occur. You'd probably be talking to machines anyhow. It's very interesting how many machines a thetan can set up and still cope. It's very fascinating. Still get something done because he gets them done in spite of his machinery. Now, a little bit of beingness then, and a little bit of self-caused differentiation, ability to change to the mood of the environment, something like that, is highly desirable. That's all very desirable. It's when you lose control of it, and when you dare no longer be at the point of receipt after you've been at the point of cause, that you've had it. Now you've got to use machinery. You've got to be over here 8 feet to the left in order to talk through. Because if it gets talked back to, why, the engram bank says that's what kills you. And you get all sorts of blike methods of communication. And a person, as he does this, of course, is less and less sees well, less and less does well, less and less is capable of coping. because he's confronting less and less, because he himself dare not receive, because receiving is terribly dangerous. That's basically the wrong thing that experience teaches us. It teaches us that to receive anything is dangerous. Similarly, it teaches us that to give anything is dangerous. And if we stacked up all of our experience and took the most salient and, quote, valuable lessons out of the sum total of all of our experience for the last 76 trillion, it would add up to just that. Things that showed you conclusively, proved utterly, in other words, that it was dangerous to communicate out, and things which proved utterly that it was dangerous to communicate in. Hence, we deal with the overt act motivator sequence and get results. But this is actually just communicate out, communicate in, reasons why you can't, reasons why you mustn't. Well, the odd part of it is the communication out solves the case, and the communication in is what the PC is sure is necessary to solve the case. Now, in that single statement, we have the reason why no past psychotherapy and no past philosophic idea could soundly restore any abilities to a person or do him any good. The therapist Q&A-ing, imitating, you see, the victim who was sitting in the chair, would begin to believe the fellow really was a victim. And therapy became one of two things. Here is somebody new that I can abreact my hostilities against, the patient, as psychiatry operates today. Here's a new target for my hostilities. I don't think they ever think much of anything else. Or they have a detached scientific viewpoint. Here is a new victim who will prove that science is ruthless. And they never get around very far to what the person did, or they get legal about it, and they claim that the individual only did bad things, and he never did anything else. And you're into justice. You're into all kinds of ethics and morals and all of that sort of thing, and you're into tremendous numbers of significances and evaluation. Was the communication good? Was it bad? Was it deserved? Was it undeserved? Well, the wisest man in the world has never been able to solve that one. No solution would tell you that a certain action in all cases was bad, or a certain action in all cases was good. There is no pat solution to this situation, because the situations vary too badly. Yet you get things like the Code Napoleon, which says certain things done by the state are always good, and certain things done by the people are always bad. That's a code of law. They've got it frozen into shape. Then somebody comes around and he says, you know, there's some injustices have been wreaked by reason of this code. Well, all codes, divorced totally from judgment, are going to result in injustice. No code of laws could ever be formulated to adjudicate all cases, and no court could ever set itself up to be totally right in such adjudication. Now we have set up an ultimate, and believe me, that one particularly will never be attainable. It's a matter of judgment. Look at the business of shooting ducks. From the hunter's viewpoint, it's good. From the duck's viewpoint, it's bad. Right away, we're in an argument. From the Humane Society's viewpoint, it's terrible. From the conservation viewpoint, it's terrible. From the chef's viewpoint, it's wonderful. We get all these various views of exactly the same action. Now, we get somebody coming along and saying, you shouldn't shoot a poor old duck. He's a nice duck. He never harmed anybody. Quack, quack. Fella sits there and starves to death. Why? You can't shoot a duck. A nice duck, they never do anything wrong. If you're hungry, you eat ducks. If there's ducks. Matter of judgment. Some other day you're not so hungry, so be humane. So when we get into the field of action, of Acts 2 and Acts received by, we get into an area of judgment. We get into a terrific significance. And as soon as we get into this tremendous significance, we can only go a short distance with a case. We can go as far with the case as the case has to be carried with significances. But after that, you get a flub. Now, why is it flub? Because sooner or later, he starts wandering up out of significances, and you've given him no place to go.
See, he says, overt act, motivator, you know. Was it bad? Was it good for me to do? Should I have bitten the dog's ear? Or shouldn't I have? I don't know that. See, my mother said it was good, and the dog down the street that didn't like that dog, he seemed to enjoy the thing. And so on, and was it good? Was it bad? Was it bad? Was it good? Was it legal? Was it illegal? Was it just? Was it unjust? Was it deserved? Was it undeserved? Let's see how.
I can go into a total fog along this line after a while, you know, because there just isn't any answer to it. That's one of the basic tricks on the track. The attainment of a total rightness or the attainment of a total wrongness is solved by the realization that they ain't. They just don't exist. So when you get a person slogging up out of this, and when he finally gets it sort of settled in his own mind, well, I've done what I did, you know, and I've gotten what I got. And that's it. You unfortunately don't have a theta clear. He can be brought up to that frame of mind, but you don't have a theta clear. Not yet. You merely resolved an individual's qualms and difficulty with regard to justice, betrayal, and deservedness and undeservedness, and the high court and the low court and the cross court and the bailiff's palm. You aren't anywhere. Because you've got this whole upper range of track that has to do with beingness, because of communicatingness, where almost anybody could take a lightning bolt square between the ears of his brand new mocked up space helmet or his brand new mocked up Roman helmet. The Roman helmet was a design evidently that arose very early on the track. I think the Romans probably arose because of the restimulation of the helmet. Anyhow, he could take a lightning bolt right between the ears and say, Joe, stop that, it tickles. And there's no overt act in that. There's no question of deservedness or undeservedness. People are above that sort of thing. You did what you did, you know. He doesn't get into that zone at all. He doesn't even touch that zone if you only process along the lines of adjudication. We got the whole top strata. Fully, the last upper half of the tone scale is missing. And that's not good enough. Now, you've got to tap some of these things because the individual is in communication in various directions. He's communicating every day. You find out that he goes home, talks to the wife. She goes home, talks to the husband. Communication occurs, invalidation occurs. They shouldn't have said it. You shouldn't have done that. You know, all this sort of thing goes on. Yiggity-yak, they come back to session. And they say it's the significance that's it. No, it's not the significance that was it. It was the communication inability, too, that was it. Communication got them into trouble. So they solved it. They come back, they're totally out of session. They've solved it. How did they solve it? They said, well, I mustn't talk to people while I'm being processed. They put themselves on a total withhold for the duration of an intensive. You say, why can't I make any progress with this PC? It's communication you can hit at and do something with. Very well. What specific processes would resolve this? Now, we've already talked about early track. We talked about general communication. How about specific communication? Well, I wish to announce to you the existence of an assist. An assist level process which cures acute illness. First time you run it on somebody, it's going to take a while to run it. Take a while to do it. Why? Because you're trying to do two things at once. You're trying to cure them up, and you're trying to get them accustomed to the idea of communication at the same time. So the first time or two that you do this with a PC takes longer than afterwards. All right. You can do this with a PT problem. You can take a PT problem, and you can make it go gone. It'll take a while the first time you ever use it, perhaps, because the individual isn't used to the process. Individual isn't at all used to the process yet. Now, you must remember when you first start in on cases that you're doing two things. You're running general communication as a process combined with specific communication as a process. And they're not used to general communication, and they can't tackle specific very well. But in spite of all this, it works surprisingly well. Now, earlier, in an earlier ACC, when Overt Withhold came out, a process came along with it called What Have You Done? That's the general class of process. Not what have you done to somebody, but just what have you done? Recall something you have done was the auditing command, see? Why did we drop that process? There were a whole bunch of processes in the same category. There was not his straight wire. There was two or three others. And that amongst them, however, hasn't made its debut again. We haven't seen that process. We aren't telling people run Overt Withhold and then go off on a general what have you done, you see. Not now telling people that. Why? We're asking a person, in essence, when we do not announce the terminal, to confront a static. They go immediately to the beginning of track and start running another thing. Too often they do this, and the case gets queasy. He can't confront a static. Can't confront another thing. You say, what have you done? What have you done? What have you done? He answers it, answers it, answers it, and all of a sudden the process doesn't seem to be biting. He seems to be kind of out of session. He is too thoroughly meshed with mass. He requires mass in order to communicate. And you're pulling the same trick as the bull. And you give the bull, el toro, aha, a cloak, and you say, look a here, little old el toro, you. There's this nice, heavy, massive red cloak with a tremendous amount of resistance. Charge it, aha. And the poor bull charges it, and there's nothing there. And you just do this to a bull for a while, and he gets a mighty sad bull. He goes into apathy. And now we send out the picadors. And even though they hurt him like mad, they shove spikes into the bull. The bull has got a nice, solid horse. And he hooks his horns into that horse, and he shoves them over up against the wall or something like that, and boy, does he push. And Mr. Bull revives. In spite of that punishment, he revives. And I don't know who's been coaching the bull fights since the last ones I coached, but I will tell you something very, very frankly. They shouldn't use picadors if they want to keep matadors alive. Because it's the cloak that does it to the bull, not the pain, not the spike. Because it's something to push against. No matter if he's being cut half to pieces, you give him something to push against and he'll push. Because it's another terminal. But you give him no terminal, he goes into apathy, I think. And if I were doing bull fighting, I would be very happy to be very spectacular and never use a picador. Never. So, you give your PC a terminal
He got something to push against, I think. But you give him no terminal. And what he does is start going back to the beginning of track, playing guessing games with who was what and where. And he didn't get along very good playing those games. Not until he adapted himself to a little beingness and so forth and got other people to agree to be somebody or be a target or be something to talk to. And after a while, why, everybody could be a little bit and they'd have a little mass there and there was identification. You could talk and you could communicate. All right. What have you done then is not good for a case in its early stages. But what have you done to located terminal makes them come up, ooh, man. Particularly if you get antipathetic terminals. Now you start using a pro-survival terminal, all you do is re-stimulate the anti-contra-survival terminals. Never run a pro-survival terminal on over with whole straight wire. He said, the real trouble with my case is my papa. The real trouble with my case is my Aunt Doris. The real trouble with my case... Well, the funny part of it is that the Mau Mau only killed those people who helped them. And if PC, left to his own advices, will only kill off those valences which assisted him. See, he says he's the victim. And these valences actually keep him from being a good victim. He never surrenders up a good overt bull valence. They wear as a Roman soldier, he clanked out along the lines one way or the other, and he picked out all the young officers in the opposing line, and he executed them in hand-to-hand combat, each one just as a stunt, you see. Only he didn't kill any of them. You see, he hamstrung them all. Then after the battle, didn't kill any of the wounded, but went around and found the most deserving officers of the enemy, you know, and halfway slit their throats. You know? Nice big bull valence, you know. Oh, no, I've never been around. I never lived before. I haven't anything to do with it. I've always been a good little old lady sitting here tending my knitting. Nothing like that. He won't surrender that one. Because it had something to push against, basically. And because he mustn't own up to it. And because he can no longer confront that type of communication because he might get it back. And, of course, the motivator proves that he can get it back. So there he is. And he doesn't use that one anymore, but it's what's wrong with him. That's that tough one. So we say, what have you done to a terminal? And we select terminal. Now it's runnable. And that's overt with whole straight wire. Recall something you have done to a contra-survival valence. Is the exact formula for overt with whole straight wire. Followed with, recall something you have withheld from a contra-survival valence. And you've got the thing packaged. It's not that anything was done to him. It was that he withheld things from others that made the other side of the picture. This is a very tricky little picture here, by the way. It's one of these weird ones. It was what he did, that forms both sides of the flow. Get the idea? It's an overt act to withhold things from people. See? And it's an overt act to do things from people, all from cause point. That's what the PC's got figured out. So he's withholding and causing both badly. And the trick that slips in is he says, that which was done to me is pressure against me, and we've got to get rid of that. Which lets him come back and be a bull, he hopes. He hopes he can be that Roman soldier again and do deeds with impunity. And never get slaughtered no more. So the first thing he comes up with is his victim valence. He says, you get away with this, and I can be as bad can be. Now I can be perfectly bad with no liability. That's my goal. Yeah.
I can communicate with total effect on other people with no effect on myself at all. Isn't that what you're going to do for me, Auditor? Please. It was so nice. No, that isn't what we're going to do for him. We're going to run him at himself causing, himself withholding. And in either case, in both cases, as the aggressor. And we got it made. Why does it run that way? Because communications, one received, I'm afraid, never hurt him a bit. And that's the lie on the track. Early on the track, you have Thetans lying around in mocked up beingness and saying, I'm dead, I'm dead, I'm killed, look what you've done, look what you've done, you're guilty, you've had this terrible effect on me, and you shouldn't have this terrible effect on me. And the other guy says, oh, get up. And the fellow gets up and says, well, all right, I just tried. They tell each other, you're supposed to lie down and be dead now, you know. You've got a terrible wound in you, and you're supposed to lie down and be dead. I am. Yeah, you're supposed to lie down and be dead. Oh, I am. Why? Well, because you got this terrible wound in your side. That killed you. Killed who? Killed you. Killed me? What's this killed? Well, that means you expired. You don't exist anymore. I don't. I'm right here. What are you trying to do to me? See, unbelievable situation. The lie comes in when you say, something has been done to me. Look what you have done to me. Nobody can do anything to you. Nothing. It's not even possible. You got to do it before it can be done. You've got to do it before it can be done. It's very funny. You realize you had to mock yourself up through all of the agonies of an operation in order to be operated on? Think of the work of it. Do you realize you have to mock yourself up through all consecutive positions of being run over in order to be run over? And much earlier on, the thing you had to decide that you could be run over. And earlier than that, why, you had to decide that being pressured by hard objects hurt. Look, what a tremendous lot of decisions there are in getting run over. You had to make them all yourself. Well, nobody else could make the decision. Now, when you flip around in various valences, you can say, however, that somebody else made the decision, but that's you over there who made the decision to you over here, don't you think? You get some fellows around that are evidently indestructible. I remember a fellow walked up to me, well, as a matter of fact, it was a conference of officers from other corvettes, and they came over and they said, Ronnie said, Hubbard, they weren't feeling in that kind of mood, they said, Hubbard, you're going to get us all killed. I said, well, who? And, well, you are. Sub shows up, something like that. You attack, attack, attack. You're going to get somebody killed sooner or later. They had people killed. I never had anybody killed. Figure that one out. I don't think anybody on the ship thought it was possible. It was just not possible. Other ships worried about it all the time. Boy, they lost men in windrows. Well, it wasn't any bravado on our part. I just didn't believe it. It was not a believable statement. I had evidently neglected to make the postulate. But these guys all came around trying to get me to make the postulate. Obviously, the safest thing in the world to do in a battle is attack. Oddly enough, that's always, nearly always, the safe thing to do is attack. And what do people who are upset do? They withdraw. Aha. Three cheers. They don't know whether we want to go into battle or not. You ask them, why don't you want to go into battle, son? They say, I might be killed. And you say, you've had it. You've done it. Give me your dog tag now. We'll send it home to your mother. He's already figured it out. And troops that run have made up their mind to be killed, don't you see? So this fellow who is being a victim has made up his mind that he's a victim. He's made up his mind that he's been killed. He's made up his mind he's been destroyed. He's made up his mind. His fixed ideas all run along this line, you see? He's trying to restrain other people with fixed ideas and beingnesses. He says, look, I am a victim. don't hit me again. That's his answer to being hit again, you see. We had to make all these things to where being hit again was serious, you see. Then he says, don't hit me again. Of course, what's that do? This withhold or withdraw promptly gets him hit. He's made another postulate. I am to be hit, and other people obey it. It's one of the amusing things that if you have any financial difficulties or anything like that, you go to a lawyer where he tells you right away to pull all your creditors in on top of you. You know, you're supposed to have a meeting of creditors. You say, well, what do you want a meeting of creditors for? What's this all about? They can do something to you? Who? You have to make the postulate that you're in trouble before they'll make the postulate you're in trouble. I could bet you could take the richest firm in the city of London and call up all of its creditors and have them come in for a meeting and have it go broke promptly. All you'd have to do is you'd have to make a postulate. All you'd have to do is maybe worry the treasurer about the state of the creditors and worry him about the state of the creditors and get him convinced that something had happened to him because of the creditors and have him call them all together and they'd all go broke. It takes some doing. You have to work this way in order to get this way. You have to keep saying while you're auditing a PC, you have to keep saying, well, going to fail again. He's not going to get any place this time. And I'm going to get all beat up auditing him. You got to set it up. Now, the last thing in the world that anybody takes any responsibility for is his own postulates when he gets down the line. Because it's so dangerous to postulate things. You know, you say, broken lamp glowed. Boom. You see? Lamp globe breaks. Oh, you say, no, I didn't mean to do that. I'm not bad cause. Well, you say, well, you silly fellow, why did you say the lamp globe breaks? And put your postulate in them. Oh, I just did it. I just did it. There wasn't any reason why I did it. I just did it, and it just happened. And I remember now, I didn't rest well last night, and I've been sort of absent-minded. In other words, I didn't do it, I didn't do it, I didn't do it, I didn't. He did it! See? But the whole of his conversation after you get him off in this line is, I didn't do it, I didn't do it, I didn't make a postulate, my postulate isn't that effective, I didn't do that, I didn't do that. But he doesn't want somebody else's postulate to stick. He marks himself up as a victim and says, you shouldn't have done it, you shouldn't have done it, you shouldn't have done it, you shouldn't have done it. It's just a game on the thing. If it weren't so fantastically tragic, it would be the funniest joke in the world. It's one of these jokes that you could cry for years about. Because it is tragic. People don't know what they knew. They don't know what they're doing. They've skidded all out of it. They have no recall on it. They couldn't dig themselves out if you gave them a clam bucket shovel with a 10-ton crane. They just couldn't dig themselves out all by themselves. They know what they've been doing, see? Don't remember. Got it all mishmashed one way or the other. And you look at this guy and you say, well, he's doing all right, living along. All he has is ulcers and a broken leg and so forth. And life's been cruel to him. Oh, life hasn't been cruel to him. He has. He's been awful cruel to him. And he doesn't even know it. Now, that's it. It's something like you set it all up to say, well, isn't this a funny joke, you know? But it's not a funny joke. You go down and see some World War II soldier still lying in a hospital, unrecovered, sick to this day, years afterward. The battle or skirmish that he got chopped to pieces in has long since been forgotten and buried in the back end of some noxious memoirs by some tiresome general. The guy's still there. He doesn't know how to dig himself out. There he is. Does no good to explain him. Well, son, you did it all yourself. The way it happened, you couldn't possibly have been wounded unless that morning you got up and you said to yourself, well, I just have a feeling I'm going to get it today. It's very funny. You explain to him, you see, it's this way. People get a premonition that they're going to get it. They think when actually they postulate that they're going to get it. And this is a method of not taking any responsibility for the postulate that they're going to get it that day. And most prediction that is called prediction is of this order. Individual says, I have a premonition. Which is to say, I'm not going to take responsibility for postulating all his hard luck I've got mocked up for me. But he doesn't even know it, so it doesn't make a good joke. Communication, outflow of, is your highest and most rapid echelon. That is the common denominator. That chops through and cuts through all other portions of anything. Communication is the common denominator to all beingness and action and so forth. It's a prior fact, you might say. Even if you just mock up something and mock up some space and an object in the space and so forth, you're in communication with that space. You're in communication with that object. And it's generally done in the hopes that somebody else will get then in communication with you. It's painting your face red. And this thing's been going on for a terribly long time. But an individual, after a while, because he's been a bad boy, begins to avoid the return. But the return can't hurt him, and that's the joke. That would be a joke if it weren't so tragic. He can only postulate that the return will hurt him and then actually postulate the hurt. When it does, he has to go that far. So you never have to run the return side of communication when you're processing. Overt withhold down deep in the significances and that sort of thing. It really keeps them interested, keeps the field clear, keeps them seeing pictures, all of this sort of thing. That's all right for that end of the track and that end of the case and so forth. That's okay. Terrific process, very powerful. You don't need anything else. Well, don't for a moment suppose, therefore, that there isn't anything else. Because you're going to get somebody up just so far toward theta clear on significances, and after that he's going to take off on nearly pure communication, rehabilitation of. And if you don't rehabilitate pure communication from that point there on, you're going to be in trouble with the case, because the case won't advance. Now, what do we mean by a pure communication process? Well, he's basically in trouble because he's had to assume locations in order to communicate from. But if you don't have a location, you don't communicate. So the location of the communication becomes the most powerful process known. And it goes into assists and PT problems in this wise. You give him a terminal. Now, I've told you why you had to give him a terminal. Something to communicate at or against. It's not even purely necessary to give him a terminal in its purest definition. Maybe this terminal is just a wall, you see. That's not a pure definition of a terminal. If you give him something to communicate against, and then you find out from where he could communicate against it or to it. And the phrasing is, from where could you communicate to a wall? That'll produce wilder effects faster than 8C. And it's not that it has to be used in a high-scale process. You say, from where could you communicate to a wall? Well, this isn't obviously going to do too much for a case, but it'll do a lot more, a lot faster than old-time 8C. And that's worth knowing, isn't it? From where could you communicate to a wall? Well, how far can you go with this sort of thing? You can go an awful long ways. PT problem. Name off the personnel involved in the PT problem. Take them one right after the other. Take the biggest drop first. From where could you communicate to? He's named this personnel, Joe. Run that flat so he can do it, feels clear. From where could he communicate to? Take the next person involved in it, Agnes. Where could you communicate to Agnes? Run that flat. And then there's Oswald. From where could you communicate to Oswald? Check back and see whether or not Agnes is pretty flat. The person had no more PT problem than rabbit. Of course, rabbits have lots of PT problems, but none of them have to do with that problem. Now, where does this thing end? Well, it doesn't end. It doesn't have any bottom. except unconsciousness and psychosis and special case, except illness, because this is the process that man handles illness. Acute illness, not chronic illness. You get the person to tell you what body part is sick, that he thinks is sick. We don't care what the medical diagnosis was. What body part does he think is sick? Actually, it's his gallbladder. You've read the medical report, but he thinks it's his back. All right, it's his back. From where could you communicate to a back? Now, I've done a case at about 103 temperature, kidney infection, so forth, albeit an easy case. Had him up, walking around, no recurrence, no temperature, so forth. About 25 minutes. Pretty good, huh? All right. Looks to me like you're back in the... you're back in the witch doctor group. Now, that's what you do, and that's how you run the process. Easy as that. You ask the person what body part it is that's ill. You know, he's going, got a bad cold, you know, got a bad cold, did the ad... And he got bad coat. You say, what body part's ill? He says, it's my right ear. All right, that's okay. Where could you communicate to an ear? It's got to be a mass. And he'll very seldom tell you about his internal organs. But it's perfectly safe to run this even as wildly as from where could you communicate to a stomach? This organ is real to most people. Kidneys aren't, gallbladders aren't, heart. He's got that from the medico. The medicos keep telling me his heart's bad. Well, what do you think is bad? Well, personally, I think it's my chest. You say, okay, from where can you communicate to a chest? See, it's his definition. These things that have mass, you've got to run it up against mass. Or it doesn't bite this rapidly. It handles PT problem, handles acute illness, handles chronic illness, so what? An individual had 89 body parts that were all ill. You just take them in rotation, one right after the other, and flatten them all. Now, if he's chronically ill, don't try to get him to look at the whole body at once because he can't span his attention that much. His attention's too fixed on a particular part. You find the parts fixed on and free it. And you just go on freeing attention with this. Now, you go on freeing attention with the auditing command. From where could you communicate to A or to a person, so on. This will run, where could you communicate to a woman? Where could you communicate to a man? Where could you communicate to a body? And even, and this is the test of the process, will run on from where could you communicate to a head? And you know that practically nothing will let you get away with processing anybody's head. Practically, there's no process that wins uniformly on heads. That's for sure. Too significant. But, of course, it runs into heavy weather when you process a communication particle, such as an eye or an ear. Where could you communicate to an ear? Heavy, heavy process. All right, so it's a heavy process. So what? All right, there you are. And you haven't got anybody sick around? Why, if you want to find out how it works, may I invite your cooperation for the sake of word of mouth and research and so forth? You walk into a hospital ward sometime and clean out a whole ward if you have a morning. Now, I wouldn't exaggerate. There are special cases which are below the level of being able to run this process. Very special cases. Psychotics, unconscious people. People who are just totally incapable of executing an auditing command or who are obsessively trying to never execute anything or totally out of communication, they don't run a communication process. But given some ability to communicate, you can lick almost anything with this particular process. Go ahead and try it. Thank you. Thank you.